The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Kent Summers, AZ Central sports columnist here momentarily. Later, Scott Peters. It is ASU U of A week. Scott has always hated the U of A. I didn't look for a hating guy because there's a lot of them out there that are former Sun Devils. But I saw the Cleveland Browns yesterday, and Scott is the assistant offensive line coach with the Browns. And you talk about a terrific story. Scott opened his own offensive line training facilities, tip of the spear, got hired by Bill Callahan, and now he's right in the middle of it. I talked with him earlier about his time in Cleveland, and they win yesterday, so Scott's going to zoom in later. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. As promised, Kent Summers with us now for a few minutes. AZ Central sports columnist. The day after the Cardinals' disaster, and 5 days before Arizona State takes on the U of A. And if you're thinking, wait, ASU, U of A, yeah, it's actually this Friday. We'll try to get some buzz going on that. But first, let's start with Kent on what happened yesterday. Like, what happened yesterday?
Kind of a continuation of what we've seen, at least over these last 3 weeks, is that defensive coordinators have figured out Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray, and this offense. The Cardinals had a 59-yard touchdown reception early in the game, busted coverage, and then did basically nothing for a half and went four straight times without gaining a first down. Kyler Murray's not throwing the ball particularly well. He's not running the ball. I mean, the Cardinals really have nothing on offense right now that they can hang their hat on, and it's going to be a test of Cliff Kingsbury's coaching ability to see if they can pull out of this over the last month.
Kent Summers with us, AZ Central sports columnist. On the offense being so inept yesterday and so incompetent here over this stretch, what is it the defensive coordinators are doing that you can see?
Well, they obviously are limiting Kyler Murray as a runner. You wonder how much they're doing, how much maybe the Cardinals are doing that since Murray had the right shoulder sprain against Seattle a few weeks ago. But I think he had five runs for 15 yards yesterday. And the Cardinals' win-loss percentage, I mean, it's dramatically different when Murray's running effectively than when he isn't. So, you know, they're taking Murray away, you know, on their zone reads. They're concentrating on making him hand the ball off. When he drops back to pass, they're very disciplined in their rush lanes. They're not letting him just take off up the middle of the field, as we saw earlier this season. And the Cardinals really seem, you know, right now to not have a counter to it. Kingsbury, after the games the last few weeks, has been quick to credit his opponent that they had a good game plan, executed it. And while that's noble thing to say and true, it also prompts the question, like, okay, what are you doing to put a defense on its heels? Why is the defense dictating this at the beginning of every game? That's the challenge going forward, beginning Sunday against the Giants in New Jersey.
I mean, they are, and I know you've talked about this, and we all have. They're DeAndre Hopkins, Hail Murray pass away from not having won a game since October. And that just is unacceptable from my point of view with the amount of talent that they have on that side of the football. Unless Murray is more hurt, way more hurt than we're aware of.
Yeah, and I don't think he is. And mentioning Hopkins, yeah, I should have mentioned that earlier. That's one of the big failings over the last 4 or 5 weeks is not getting him the ball consistently. His numbers aren't where they were at the first half of the season. On Sunday, I think they targeted him twice in the first half. He did draw a pass interference, but that's just further evidence why you have to throw him the ball more than 4 or 5 times a game, even if he's covered by a Jalen Ramsey. Take your chances. We've seen what he can do even when he's covered. You traded for him. You paid him millions. Don't just have him standing out there like he's a light pole or something. You know, throw him the ball.
Is everything good between Murray and Hopkins? And I asked you this because the Fox cameras caught a shot of Cliff sitting on the bench while the game is going, talking with Kyler about it was said, reported, get the ball to Hopkins. Don't be afraid to throw the ball Hopkins' way. That's what was being reported. Is everything okay between Murray and Hopkins from your view?
I don't know. You know, I was at the game in the stadium watching it live, so it was tough to pick up the body language or expressions. I had friends and other reporters tell me it didn't look good on television from both Kyler Murray's point of view and Hopkins. Look, every elite receiver I've known has a little bit of diva in them, even Larry Fitzgerald. They want the football. They're not happy when they don't get the football. Some just keep it under wraps better than others. So I understand where DeAndre Hopkins is coming from. And they, you know, those two, I wouldn't say butt heads, but Kyler Murray jumped on Hopkins a couple times earlier this season when he, you know, thought he, you know, wasn't where he should be or something, and they poo-pooed it. I don't know where that relationship is going forward. I think it's okay. I think it's probably one of those game day things that happens out of frustration, but easy way to fix it, throw DeAndre Hopkins the ball.
Yeah, that's what you really have to do. So moving forward, are they a playoff team? Are they going to make the postseason? Today they're on the outside looking in. They play at a Giants team that's won three in a row, that's playing terrific this coming Sunday.
Yeah, the Giants team that throttled a Seattle offense on Sunday, a Giants team that gets its quarterback back this week, probably, and Daniel Jones coming back from injury. So right now I'd say no, not the way they're playing. I mean, as you said in the opening, they're a Hail Mary away from losing five straight, and that can't happen. A playoff team, they've fallen now behind the Vikings in tiebreakers. The 49ers are breathing down their neck. They have the Giants who are playing well. Philadelphia coming to town. Okay, the Eagles aren't very good, but then you finish against the 49ers and the Rams. I mean, not an easy last month for the Cardinals. So right now, I think it's going to be really, really difficult for them to get in. They have to get to at least 9 wins, I think. And nothing I've seen from this team over the last month suggests it can win 3 or 4.
Before I get you out of here, ASU, U of A, Friday in Tucson. Zero buzz. I get it with the pandemic. U of A, really no buzz around that program. It sounds like Kevin Sumlin is circling the drain. Makes me wonder what they could do with Sean Miller's contract down there and the level one allegations against basketball. Herm is up here in a space where, what do you make out of Herm? This game, Sumlin, put a bow on it.
Yeah, Sumlin, I mean, I think Sumlin really needed a victory, obviously. I think the whole question at U of A is, do they have the money to buy him out and make a change? You know, they've laid off a ton of people in their athletic department. Things are tight. They're not the only ones going through this. That's the buzz around that program, is can they afford another year of Kevin Sumlin? Do they feel like he's about to turn things around? With ASU, I mean, play one game, then miss 3 weeks, and then come out and be rusty, understandably so. This whole season is sort of a write-off for ASU. It's glorified spring ball. That said, you'd like to see some development and some improvement in Tucson on Friday. Obviously, from ASU standpoint, Sun Devil fans, they want to see a victory, but you would like to see, especially on offense, I think you could see defensively that team get better against UCLA, even though they gave up, you know, that late drive. But offensively, you'd like to see Jaden Daniels be sharper. You'd like to see that whole passing game be sharper. But the way U of A gives up rushing yards, if I'm Herm Edwards, I may just have Jaden Daniel handing off and doing nothing else on Friday.
It really is an interesting time with Daniels and what you do on that front, because you have to send the message to him about next year, and he can't leave. But you got to send a message that the program is heading in the right direction.
Well, the thing, you know, it was interesting in the offseason, Pro Football Focus did their ratings of quarterbacks in the Pac-12 and had him rated pretty low.
Yeah.
Because of accuracy issues. And I know a lot of Sun Devil fans were upset about that and poo-pooed it. But, you know, so far this season, that's held up. And granted, it's hard to judge a guy, you know, when you play 1 week and then have 3 weeks off, et cetera. But it's something he needs to work on. And especially, you know, with aspirations beyond ASU and in the NFL, that's something they obviously want to see.
Let you go off that. I appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
There is AZ Central sports columnist Kent Summers. Scott Peters a little bit later in the show from Cleveland, the former Sun Devil, on the rivalry game and the Browns and the job he's doing there. We're back with more after this timeout. Welcome back. Again, we're in the Desert Financial Credit Union studios. We appreciate Desert Financial Credit Union and their support. Scott Peters in about 10 minutes. Former Sun Devil with U of A, the game this coming Friday afternoon down in Tucson on ASU U of A. And also, he's doing a great job with the Cleveland Browns. Browns are a terrific story. I watched most of that game yesterday. They took apart Tennessee and then they hung on for the victory. On the Cardinal game, so there's a lot to dive into on this, and I didn't want to keep Kent forever on every angle, but you know, I'm just looking at numbers here, and I'm looking at the Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins situation, and I just feel like on that one, Cliff Kingsbury has got to get involved. And you'll say, well, how do you know he's not? And I would say to you that if you see your players that are having issues like what we saw yesterday, or hear from people that would know that everything's not copacetic between those two, then, you know, this is Cliff's team. The average lifespan of an Arizona Cardinal coach who is not named Arians or Wisenhunt is about 3 years, okay? And we are just over a year and a half into the deal. And I would say that there are more doubters of Cliff Kingsbury then there are believers in Cliff Kingsbury here 5 weeks into this. I think there are those that were critical of the Kyler Murray draft pick of the Cardinals, and now the size issue, again, batted ball yesterday. Is it growing pains? Is it they don't have their full complement of players? Larry Fitzgerald's not going to be here forever. You know, if this is what life looks like when Larry Fitzgerald is gone for the Cardinal offense, Cardinal offense yesterday, 232 yards. You should get that in a half. Like the Rams had double that amount, 463 yards. And here's the thing. So when Sean McVay, the head coach of the Rams, goes after Jared Goff and just says, we have to get better play, we don't get that out of Cliff Kingsbury here in Arizona. We don't. We get a lot of the usual coach speak stuff. I mean, I hear the post-game interviews and I hear people within the industry trying to do their jobs here in Arizona. And I'm not looking for flash and dance, but it's just a reality that coaches don't have to say anything when reporters aren't allowed into locker rooms. They don't. And so they don't, for the most part. It's just like this vanilla, you know, white dot on a white wall deal of, you know, yeah, well, we didn't win and so on and so forth. And you're rushed through, and it's let's just get these meaningless questions out of the way. And so the coach is not having his feet put to the fire like it should be. Everything is not great, so don't pretend that it is. This is where we're supposed to do our jobs, and sometimes you bring out the fly swatter, and sometimes you bring out the sledgehammer. And it's just, to me, inconceivable to see this offense fall so far in the last month. And so when you've not won a game outside of a Hail Mary pass, and I don't know what it is, Hail Marys here in Arizona turn into Hail Murrays or, you know, the Jalen Murray throw. And it's like, okay, so you guys pulled it out and it was a great moment. But in the grand scheme of things, has your team been to a Rose Bowl? No. Grand scheme of things, has your team been to a Super Bowl? No. Has your team been to the playoff? No. That's what we're all about here. We're not all about just, oh my gosh, moments. No. Chase Edmonds. Where's Chase Edmonds been the last few weeks? Kenyon Drake comes back. Kenyon Drake. You know, go right down the list of players. And another Zane Gonzalez missed field goal yesterday. I get it. He's a Sun Devil. I get it. There's people that are all excited about where he went to college. It's not worked. You can't miss field goals under 50 yards indoors in controlled climate, even if the roof's open. Can't happen. And so we're sitting here now with a team that is, you know, in dire straits. They're going to get on a plane. They're going to go back east. We're going to hear all the nonsense this week about flying, how tough it is to fly from west to east to play a game at 11 a.m., No, this is where you got to step forward because your playoff lives are on the line. You are highly paid competitors. Show up, be ready to play. I don't want to hear 1 ounce of, well, you know, it's really hard to get on a plane and go back east. I don't know. It's not Southwest where you're crammed into C11. It's not like you're going to get a bag of peanuts along the way to go to New York to play a football game. So show up. Be ready. You know, that was a pretty easy 10-point victory if you take a look at it in the grand scheme of things. Every last set of numbers showed that the Rams dominated the Cardinals. There were six different offensive lines, by my count, running out on the field yesterday. Six! So you're not going to have any consistency. Now, what was the number I had here? The Rams ran 79 plays. The Cardinals ran 62. 17 more plays for the offense. Again, you're not going to win much of anything when that happens. And so the Giants go to Seattle. They win. They're on a roll. They're a very physical team. They didn't even have their starting quarterback, and they beat Seattle. Yeah, the whole idea of the NFC West being so difficult, it is. But you tell me, when you see the teams that are out there playing, are the Cardinals better than, here in late or early December, are they better than any of the teams within their division? I'll include the 49ers with the way that they're playing right now, and I would say no, today. So, you know, Minnesota hadn't won a game their first 5 weeks, and now they're in front of the Cardinals when it comes to a playoff position because of tiebreakers. The Arizona State UCLA game was late on Saturday night. I watched it. It's 3 hours of my life plus change. I will never get back. It's because it's what I do. But as I'm sitting here watching, it's like, wow, this is really not good. This feels like early September football, and there's nobody in the stands, and UCLA is not great shakes either. And so I can get all the hype squad I want out of Jaden Daniels, and he's a fine young man, and he's a terrific young player, and I know it's great to have college football and Pac-12 after dark. You know, let's make sure that we get the messaging out. Let's make sure that we market this. And then the product's like, ugh, get this over with. So here we are with Territorial Cup week. This is usually the week where Sun Devil fans and Wildcat fans go after each other, and no pity for the kitty and scum devils and all that stuff that make people's lives much more enjoyable. It's usually done Thanksgiving week, but here we are in a pandemic. The game is being played Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock. I mean, I've complained for years about they play this game on the Friday after Thanksgiving, and everybody's all excited, except I see the ratings. When Auburn's playing Alabama, nobody's watching ASU, U of A on the Pac-12 network. So this year, they're going to play on a Friday night. It's fine. They'll get a number. It's fine. But it's two teams that haven't won a game. This is really their Rose Bowl. Herm is talking in about an hour and a half. And I'm sure that he's going to use the phrase, this is our bowl game. This is the rivalry. This is what you play for. This is what you get up for. And he's right. He's right. I'm not demeaning it. I'm not talking down on it. I mean, this should be Kevin Sumlin's final game. It really should be. Anybody that sits there, like when Sumlin chose U of A over ASU, when a big cigar booster in Paradise Valley stepped forward for the U of A and said, yeah, you know what? I want to stick it to ASU, which happened. And the Sun Devils were left to go with Herm Edwards, which was just fine. I wrote the day Herm was hired. Great pick. And Ray, I trust. I wrote the day that Kevin Sumlin was hired. We'll see. We'll see. And he's gone down there, and he's taken a check. And in state, he's landed a couple of nice players, but they had less than 10,000 season tickets sold for U of A football before the pandemic. Less than. Give you an idea of where things were. When Rich Rod was there, Rich Rod and Greg Byrne, north of 25,000 season tickets. People don't flat care. And then you have your basketball program and a level one violation in Tucson. And so Sean is sitting there, and the two sides kind of looking at each other saying, okay, we laid off over 20 people in the athletic department. Who's going to blink first? Sean, you going to go? Because things are going to change there. They just have to change financially. But they're not changing on the football field. And so, you know, I'm looking at Friday's game. Jordan's going to go. I'm going to watch. I might even DVR it. It's just not that big of a deal. It isn't. If you're all wound up about it, it's fine not being on, getting on your case. But there's a lot of options on a Friday night, 2 weeks before Christmas, than sitting there watching two teams that haven't won a game. And with this, I'll be just fine whatever I end up doing on Friday night. Scott Peters is next because, look, there is the angle of hearing from former Sun Devils that get all wound up for this game. And Scott's doing a terrific job with the Cleveland Browns as their assistant offensive line coach. We'll tie both together with Scott Peters. He zooms in next. I'm Brad Sussmat. So with the Territorial Cup this Friday afternoon, that's what an odd year it is. Friday afternoon in December, ASU plays U of A. I figured I have to have somebody on that A, doesn't like the U of A, and that's fine. I mean, there's the other side of the street too. B, who's killing it in the NFL as an assistant offensive line coach with the Cleveland Browns, one of the best stories in the NFL this year. So I found Scott Peters, our old friend. An original here at Sports 360 with Gray Rugemer back in the day. First of all, I'm very proud of how you're doing with the Browns. Good seeing you.
Great seeing you, Brad. Yeah, thank you. It's been an interesting year, but we're happy that we're having some success.
Let's start, Scott, with the idea of ASU U of A week. Hatred, is that too strong a word when it came to this week for you at ASU?
It's always about that, Brad. You know, you got that great rivalry, and obviously this year, as strange as it is, I think that hatred is always a factor, and this year maybe more so because it looks like a short run this year, obviously. So if you come home with that trophy, then maybe there's some salvage. You can salvage a season on some level, right?
What was it about the U of A week for you, Scott? Did you go about things different? Was it all the same? Did you have to get amped up as the week went along, or were you ready, set, go?
Well, like as you participated in that rivalry as a player, like your freshman year, you know, my freshman year, I heard stories and guys hated them. And I'm like, you know, what's the big deal? And you get into the game, you go, wow, this is nasty. It's a real rivalry. It's a real hatred because you figure down there that, you know, U of A is sometimes, I mean, this has been kind of the story for years, in my opinion, is that they don't care how they do from, you know, as the season goes, as long as they beat ASU, you know, that's a big deal. So it's a dirty game, a nasty game, a physical game. And, you know, it's always a game that's memorable, but coming out of there with a win is important. So you do crank up the rhetoric on the, you know, during the game week.
Describe nasty. What is nasty during a U of A ASU game? What happened to you or what did you dish out?
Well, I can't disclose everything they dished out, but rules have changed a little bit, you know. It's just the extra stuff. It's the extra stuff, you know. It's not as friendly and cordial. I mean, you're really, like, trying to get after people in the pile. You are trying to finish guys over the pile. You don't want to be the guy that gets the last shove in there. And so over time, you know, you try to just break them down. So it's personal more so than anything.
What is your most vivid ASU U of A memory?
1999, we played U of A in Sun Devil Stadium, and J.R. Redmond. I think we ran for about 300 yards against them. So broke them in half, and it was a fun time for us. And as an offensive lineman, that's what you want to do. You want to put a lot of yards on the defense, because when you really get a chance to do that over time throughout the game, you feel them kind of break. It's kind of like the butter softens, and you feel that the knife just kind of glide right through it, you know.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Did you have any friends on the U of A when you were at ASU?
Not at the time, but we became friends afterwards. You know, that thing, it's impossible to really befriend anybody on, you know, as you're actively playing. But afterwards, we, you know, as it turns out, ironically, I have a ton of friends that went to U of A. So, you know, the rivalries, it's a momentary, it's hatred for a moment, but, you know, you can move past that. But you got to win. You got to win this game if you're ASU.
Scott Peters with us for a couple of minutes, former ASU Sun Devil lineman, of course, ASU U of A this Friday. The Browns are 9-3. You're the assistant offensive line coach in year one. Could you have ever imagined it going like this?
No. I mean, if you take everything that we've endured this year, I mean, the coronavirus, you got COVID, you got the Browns of all teams to do well, and then for me to be a part of it, I couldn't have. I didn't necessarily say I could see this coming, but I'm excited to be here, and it's fun to have a be around a great group of guys and watch them grow because have success on the field too, because the work that they're putting in is they're putting a lot of work in under some crazy under crazy conditions, as everyone is, right, with the COVID issue.
Yeah, you have been viewed as one of those gurus when it comes to offensive line coaching with tip of the spear. You open that up. How has that helped you with the Browns? And are you still learning in that position?
Oh, I mean, I'm learning. Yeah, I'm learning a ton. It's I guess I could say this. I studied so much at the minutia of the one-on-one matchups, and I spent so much time working on the individual techniques. So the learning curve for me has been, it's been unbelievable to be around Bill Callahan. You know, Callahan's a guru in every aspect of the word when it comes to offensive line play and you know, in the offensive and scheming. So from my standpoint, from my education's been around the scheme element, and then being able to add value in the microcosm, which is the one-on-one matchups, being able to teach, you know, get the most out of the players in terms of their leverage.
It is good seeing you. I'm glad you're doing so well, and the Browns are having a great run. They're playing meaningful football in December. Stay well, stay safe. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad. Great seeing you too, buddy.
There is Scott Peters, and we're back with more after this timeout. So a few things before we get out of here, and that is a couple games today and a game tomorrow. The NFL just trying. I don't know if they're going to make it to the finish line in terms of everybody playing the equal number of games. Already today in Carolina, their facility has been shut down for the next 2 days. We're going to start to hit that spot. It's really interesting, and I commend the NFL for being able to get this far without zero games being canceled, postponed. Okay, so they've had to push games back, and they've not been in a space yet where the commissioner even had referred to potentially, we may have teams that don't play an equal number of games. That would be a bad thing. But as we're getting deeper into the virus here in this time of year, and teams are now starting to have cases pop up all over the place, it feels like, I don't know if we're going to get to that spot. Are fans really interested? The numbers would say yes, in having games played in the afternoon on a weekday. Like last week's Steelers-Ravens game had 10 million people, not joking, 10 million that tuned in for an afternoon football game. Now you have a Steelers team that hadn't lost a game, and that's a great rivalry, and it's a great brand of football, and you had some marquee names and all that stuff. But when you have Washington and the Steelers today, the Steelers are complaining about, you know, this is not equitable and so on and so forth. You just got to roll through it. I would like to see a perfect season out of the Steelers. I really would. But are we going to get to a spot where there's games that are going to be in the middle of the week and say, why exactly, and I'll just pull one off the top of my head, why exactly are the LA Chargers playing Jacksonville and we're playing this game? Why would we do that? And I know that there's draft positions and there's this and there's that, but you really have to give it to the NFL to get this far. I know that there are those that say, well, you know, if I were being tested every day, if teachers were being tested every day, I understand that. I'm going to stick to sports on this one for a bit. The NFL is the one that stepped up and said, let's figure this out. We're willing to take in the costs of it. The NBA figured out a way to get through their season. Major League Baseball did have a World Series. None of it's perfect. None of it's ideal. Is it we have to have our football? There is a sense of normalcy on a Sunday afternoon. There is a sense of, hey, is Kyler Murray going to get it figured out with DeAndre Hopkins? The Cardinals going to New York to play the Giants this Sunday? I'm really interested in that game. It may be 75 degrees here in Arizona and there's 100 excuses to go do other things. I'm going to watch. I'm invested to see where this team comes in at. I really think it's an interesting time for Cliff Kingsbury. It's an interesting time for Herm Edwards. You know, Herm's had to fight the virus himself and has a football program that he's trying to keep together. There's been some players that have said, you know what, I'm opting out, or they've been suspended and they're moving on to the next phase. There's some nice young talent that's come in, but none of us really know. What we're going to hear is next spring, assuming there is spring football, if I'm to believe the vaccine coming into play, that by April we may have spring football. I find it hard to believe that we would have Pac-12 spring football in February like we had the last couple of years, but it's the Pac-12, so who knows with that group. You're going to have this, well, you know, last year he didn't get a lot of this and a lot of that because of the virus. You're going to hear programs that are going to start using reasoning and rationale around the virus, and coaches are going to do that for their own self-preservation. I think this has been a terrific year to be nimble. I've liked seeing college football games scheduled on a week's notice. It's kind of cool to have Coastal Carolina play BYU on the drop of a hat. Why would we not want more of that? Now, on the other side, why do we want Sunday morning games at 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. or a Sunday night game? Like, who really is sitting there in mass numbers watching college football on a Sunday night? Like last night, who really is watching that? I don't know of many people that would or could or should. I want that to get back to normal. But I think the idea of, well, we got to get our schedules in place. I've heard this through the years with people that work on schedules. Well, they just don't want to play us. Well, we just couldn't make it work. And then, what do you know? On like 5 days' notice, you have games being put together. So you can't tell me that it can't happen. You just have to be that forward-thinking athletic department. You can't be the one that says, this is how we've always done it, so this is what we're going to do. Can't be that case. Can't be that way. If you get a chance today, I watched 60 Minutes last night, and they did a big deep dive on sports being cut because of football and basketball in college sports being cut. And they focused in on PJ Fleck and Minnesota's athletic department. Ray Anderson deserves a real pat on the back for how he's been able to navigate through all this time. And at least publicly, I haven't seen, heard anything of people being asked to take pay cuts or positions being eliminated over at Arizona State. I haven't. Meantime, in Tucson, it's been 20 people, north of 20 people, that have been, you're gone. See you later. And so if you're the U of A this week and you're Dave Hickey, you're the athletic director, your football program hasn't won in a year and a half. You hired a coach that's really not all that engaged, if I'm to believe the people that I trust and talk to around that athletic department. And if you end up losing this game, your season ticket base is already right around 9,000 to 9,500 fans. How do you keep Kevin Sumlin this week? How do you do it? And how do you do it with the Title I allegations or Level I allegations against Sean Miller coming? It's not being just bantered around. They're coming. So how do you do that? I mean, the pressure really is on. I get it. It's ASU U of A. But there's far more pressure on U of A to win this game than there is Arizona State. Arizona State doesn't win this game, it's going to be, oh, well, you know, it was pandemic year. Arizona State doesn't win this game, it'll be an embarrassment to Arizona State because U of A hadn't won in a year and a half. It'll be total jubilation for a program that's doing nothing in Tucson. That's why when I look at this rivalry, and again, it's another year of neither team playing to go to Pasadena. You know, and neither team's going anywhere off of this one. Arizona State may add another game. I don't know for sure if that's going to happen. I think they could. I think they should look at BYU. Say, hey, let's play. Come on down. Let's get a game on. Play somebody. Keep it going. Get one more in. But I think the pressure, if we're really coming down to it, unless Kevin Sumlin's already a dead man walking, the pressure's on U of A to win this game. I don't think there's any question about it. We're going to head over and work on the television show now. All of our content is up on the website at sports360az.com. Sports360az.com. Jared Nielsen is the Iron Man day in and day out, getting the show done and put together. Have yourself a great day.